Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 779. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, it is a busy time at the house, mostly in the work department. So you know, it makes fitting in wrestling sometimes kind of interesting. I just watched the beginning of Raw right before recording here, but that's not where we're going to start. We're going to start at nearly the end of Raw. There has been much speculation, but no concrete word, even from reputable sites, about one Johnny Gargano and his whereabouts. Since I do follow him on the Twitter, I know I had seen him at Cleveland Browns training camp. So he was definitely there with his family. And, you know, it seemed like the Cleveland Raw would be a logical spot for him to come back. But, nope, he pops up, is it just a week later in Toronto?
I think it's 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah, so he pops up 2 weeks later. I guess this just seems completely unsurprising to me at this point that he would make the choice to come back to the WWE.
Not surprising at all. Once Triple H gained back power and you saw the people who were coming back, you had to figure that Gargano was going to make that decision to take whatever offer WWE is offering. Now, granted, I don't know. No one really knows what actual conversations Johnny ever actually had with Tony Khan, and if there was anything of resembling a bidding war going on there. But I felt like this was a good move for both parties. It felt like a big moment. He has, he Biden. No one could have foreseen 9 months ago where this summer was gonna take us. But he bided his time, saw the birth of his son, and got to spend some time at home. Made only one wrestling appearance for AIW out of Cleveland. The company that basically gave him a start. So and I think did one, and the only other appearance I believe he made was at StarCast over SummerSlam weekend.
Uh-oh.
And then he just did nothing else. I mean, it was incredibly strange for someone who has, loved wrestling as much as Johnny Gargano has, to completely walk away from it for 9 months of his life.
Yeah, and I mean, considering the level of internet love that he always or has mostly gotten his career, that there wasn't more speculation that he'd come over to AEW, just as a whole. Like, I guess people thought that it would be a natural landing spot for him, just because there was the proverbial glass ceiling, I would imagine, for him in the WWE with Vince around. And I guess he seems like one of those perfect candidates for AEW to snap up. It's also kind of interesting. I don't know if he just kind of fell victim. Well, no, because he would have been before Claudio signed, if I'm not mistaken. Like, Claudio's a more recent release within the WWE release system.
was never released.
Oh, well, that's also true.
His contract went up, and he just decided to bide his time. So, good for him, and, you know, he's landed now in the ideal situation for him with his wrestling dad in charge of everything. No, he would not have gotten a fair shake in Vince McMahon's WWE. I don't know exactly what he was offered to stay originally, if he was offered much to stay at all. Certainly would not have been a Vince McMahon guy. But now he really does have an opportunity here. And I really do want to see the 2016 to 18 Johnny Gargano really, you know, come back and really see what he can do in this environment as, you know, the underdog, white meat baby face, you know, fairly wholesome type that he can be, and that where I believe he was the most effective. Yes, in the last year of Black and Gold, he proved he could be a heel, and that's important. But where Gargano was absolutely at his best was in that period between the DIY tag team, the breakup, the match with Andrade, followed by the lights out match with Ciampa. The first match was with Ciampa.
Yeah.
Then from there, the whole Gargano Ciampa storyline got very choppy, and overdone, and trying to get too cute with it. Gargano wants to beat Ciampa so bad, he's willing to help him become champion, so he could beat him to become champion. He kind of sort of turns heel, but then he doesn't. He teams with Ciampa. They still fight each other. You know, and all the while the matches between the two of them, and then throwing in Adam Cole, just become just these overly choreographed, overly long, self-indulgent, you know, move fests and kickouts and stare at your hands, Johnny, stare at your hands, and all that. That is not my favorite period of Johnny Gargano. So to get back to the real earnest, wholesome white meat baby face that he was before they overcomplicated everything. That I think could be a real sweet spot for him. I think there's a role for someone in that regard. You know, the guy basically put about 6 or 7 years into the developmental system. Now, as a technical worker, he never needed it. Oh. But I'm sure from some charisma personality standpoint, yeah, he definitely has some benefit from it, but
yeah,
no, he was kept as a tentpole of a brand, and there was no real thought to him going to the main roster to have a big career of his own, and now he's going to get that opportunity. And you know what, for everything he did do for NXT, even though there was a period there where I don't feel like he was being used to the best of his potential, he's going to get that chance now, and he should get that chance for everything he did for NXT. And, you know, while he's still somewhat young, and while he's still, you know, has it in him, let's see where he can go. Let's see what the ceiling for Johnny Gargano in Triple H's WWE is.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting question. He definitely got one of the bigger pops last night.
Yeah, that was a good. That was definitely a good town and a good crowd to debut him in front of. If it wasn't Cleveland, then yeah, that Toronto crowd last night, you know, tremendous crowd. Although they did seem to take some time to really get into everything, but once they did, yeah, it was a great crowd. Johnny had a great reaction. Kind of had a good promo, you know, both tying in, you know, the story, everything that's happened with him for people who have followed his career, and also explaining who he is to people who haven't followed his career. He did a good job there. The interaction with Theory was fine, as Theory was the last person he was really heavily involved with in NXT. So to, you know, do something there and reference that history, you know, it was a good start for Johnny Gargano in on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, I do think that to your point. I think he's a good enough worker to be able to pull off the Rey Mysterio, that much smaller than everyone else. You know, he's in that, Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan kind of category where, I think his offense, especially on the main roster, is more conducive to that role is underdog babyface guy. Like, in NXT, especially when he was around there, the big guys didn't stick around too much. You know, he was not wrestling the trees that often. Like, Keith Lee, Dijakovic, who else were kind of around in that time period? And he never really... I'm not going to say they never wrestled, but I also don't think that they had long feuds either. But, you know, I think his offense is better suited for that babyface underdog role. Just because, yeah, like, he's still going to be undersized. You know, that part of him being in the WWE, especially on the main roster, like, that part, I think it can be overcome, but it's still going to exist. Like, it's going to be part and parcel to how his character plays, I think.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Once he starts wrestling people a lot bigger than him, once you start to realize how short he actually is, and then you put him against the guys who aren't even considered big guys, and how much bigger than him they are, that is rarefied air of your Mysterios, your Danielsons, the guys who could overcome it to that degree.
I guess, would you make that argument? To me, CM Punk is one of those guys that I think maybe he's just tall enough not to really be considered short. Like, I don't think he's tall, but he's like 6'1 or 6'2. Like, he's just tall enough that he doesn't look too short around some other people. But yeah, Gargano, I don't know what they list him at, but I remember looking the one time, and I swear it was 6 foot, and I about fell over laughing, because I am 5'9" on my driver's license, and he was 100% shorter than me. So, he is not a tall gentleman.
No, he's not. And once again, he's going to get the chance to show what he can do here. And at the end of the day, no matter how hard he tries, no matter how hard Papa H decides to push him, at the end of the day, it might be too much to overcome. And once again, the names you mentioned, Mysterio, Danielson, there's really not as many as you really think really made it to that level.
Yeah, it's a handful. Because, like, I mean, I'd even say, because, like, I'm trying to think of, like, because CM Punk was a guy that I'm thinking is, like, maybe in the next category up of size to superstar kind of ratio. I just had one on the tip of my brain other than him, and I can't even, I'm blanking on it now. That sucks. You know, who didn't... Well, I guess maybe Seth Rollins is kind of in that category where he's just big enough where, like, when he does face the Brock Lesnars of the world, you're like, oh, God, man, he is not very big. But he's also, again, like, maybe 6'2 or something, and he's just tall enough that he doesn't look super short, at least, against them.
No. Seth might be taller than 6'2". He might be he might be 6'3". So he's he says, I think Seth's deceptively a pretty big guy. That's again. No, I'm trying to think like who's another person who's another one of these, you know, 5'7" or so, 5'6" to 5'9" guys who.
I guess Dean Malenko is a guy that, now that I'm thinking on it a little bit more, but to get to that, like you said, like, I think there's something to it. Like, Dean Malenko is really popular. He wasn't Daniel Bryan popular.
No.
Like you said, or Rey Mysterio, like, you can find my mask all over the world kind of famous.
Yeah, you know. Guerrero, Eddie Guerrero's definitely in that mix. So yeah, it is an upper echelon, you know, to really. But then maybe Gargano never becomes a world champion. maybe he never does, you know, ascend beyond Intercontinental or United States title. At some point, so well, it's kind of, we'll see. I mean, it's kind of, you know, he's a really good, great worker. Just, you know, someone who, you know, really did carry the flag of NXT for so long. It was beyond time.
It was time
3 years ago.
Yeah, that time period that when things started to not go right, like, that really would have been the right time to ship him up to the main roster.
Yeah,
I'm with you. Like, I enjoyed the hell out of that, the way stuff, it cracked me up in NXT. But yeah, he kind of had a couple of years there that largely should have been spent on the main roster.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be kind of interesting. I suppose we can move on from Johnny Wrestling to Mr. Canada, Edge, coming out for, the WWE did the smart thing and put this last.
Yes, yes, for the first time since Triple H fully taken over. The right match went last on Monday Night Raw.
You know what? I didn't even think about it in that context, but yeah, that is correct. There were no weird shenanigans with trying to bring anyone out for a pop after Edge came out. Like, that was you definitely need to work that whole Toronto angle, since I believe he is the only one of the Canadians from actual Toronto, because Sammy's from Montreal and Kevin is from somewhere, Maryville, Quebec, Maryville. Canada.
Just say Montreal. Just say Montreal. It's all Montreal.
But yeah, of the Canadian, I mean, Natalia is obviously, I don't know if she's actually, she's actually from Calgary.
Yeah,
I would take she hasn't lived there in a very long time, but
no, I don't. Maybe her dad was already living in Florida by the time she was born, but I don't know.
Yeah, but not a whole lot of the Canadians on the roster I can think of are from Toronto. Although I will admit, shocking discovery that Aaliyah was from Toronto on that show last night.
Yeah.
But anyway, we don't need to get to that right now.
We'll get to that.
But let's keep focus on Edge, at least for now. And the fact that, yeah, Triple H finally put on the expected main event of a show during the main event slot. And yeah, it was the right thing to do. Edge just obviously, what was it, his first time in 10 years? Or was
it? Yeah, probably have to be 11. It's going to be over 11. You know, since he never, you know, I mean, they specifically said Raw and Triple Edge did spend most of his time on SmackDown, so I assume there was a SmackDown in Toronto at some point in, like, in early 2011.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little bummed it doesn't have a date on the write-up that I normally look at, so that's fine.
That but wrestled on, but yeah, so but no, that does put it in over 11 years.
Yeah.
So a suitable reaction. I think that crowd in Toronto was the biggest crowd they've had for a Raw or SmackDown since going back on the road, and probably since sometime in 2019. You know, they were already doing well, and they still moved a good amount of tickets after the X match was announced. You know, a hell of a homecoming. They, you know, it was a cool moment to see.
Yeah, and it is one where I guess it seemed a little premature for Damian Priest to take the win. Also, I don't know how you continue the feud since he beat him. I guess Finn Balor's up next.
Yeah, I guess Finn Balor's up next, and I'm sure we're gonna see Beth versus Rhea or a mixed tag in the coming months, weeks and months, possibly even at Clash at the Castle.
Yeah, they definitely set up a mixed tag at the end of that match with Beth and A plus for the Beth fashion. The jacket and pants combo was pretty sharp there, Miss Phoenix, and my compliments if you ever listen to this podcast. It's a good match to go to. I guess it's always fun to pull Beth Phoenix out of retirement for a match here and there. I don't know what she's up to these days. Did not go back to commentary on NXT. I mean, I'd be kind of excited. I feel like her and Barrett worked well together. And not that I have a problem with Barrett and Vic Joseph as a team, but kind of miss my Betty a little bit.
Well, I mean, I don't think they would ever. She would ever be the lead announcer. I think that, you know.
Oh.
And it was totally her decision. I mean, I think.
Yeah.
With the kids and everything, and it was totally her decision. But yeah, no, I think we're gonna get some Beth and Rhea action coming. That should be tremendous as well. No, and then I don't know if you caught this. Supposedly, after Raw ended, Edge took the microphone and said that next August in Toronto, he wants to end his career for good.
Oh,
which may very well, he didn't use the words, but I admit that seemingly implies that they may very well be running SummerSlam at Rogers Center next August.
Yeah, that, I don't know if he's supposed to let the cat out of the bag. I suppose I'm not completely surprised. They've been announcing at least WrestleMania, and I feel like SummerSlam has started to get some creep in that department where they're announcing it almost a year in advance.
Yeah, they didn't quite announce SummerSlam. Curiously, the Royal Rumble has been rumored for San Antonio for months and months now, but they still don't confirm that. So I wonder. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but yeah, no. What I've said does seem to indicate that that especially with the success that they had running the Air Canada Center, that doing SummerSlam from the former Sky Dome is definitely an idea that would be worth doing. You've got a great local following, you've got people coming from all over the country, you've got people coming in from the U.S. I'm sure it would do very well.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to admit that would Toronto would be on my list of cities I would not mind visiting for purposes other than wrestling.
No, not at all.
So if I get to roll some wrestling in on top of that trip, who's to argue here? So yeah, I guess I did not see that news today as I was mostly driving today. Interesting. That is some interesting news, and I suppose we'll see if Edge sticks to it. I mean, I guess I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I'm almost a little bit surprised. Like, he seemed to be having, not that he was going to be turning into The Rock anytime soon. He seemed to be working pretty regularly in TV, though.
Yeah, he was fairly successful. It's kind of a very interesting decision on his part to even embark on this comeback at all, since it seemed like things were going really well for him. But
I could understand the initial "Hey, I didn't get the send off that I wanted" situation, but as things have moved along and we've had an injury here and there. And who knows, maybe he was filming something that time off before he came back to attack Judgment Day. But I guess I am a little bit surprised that hasn't, or might be coming back into focus, next year, should he decide to, retire on his own terms. And yes. Considering where he came from, and I mean, I remember being really bummed for him having to retire shortly after WrestleMania so many years ago.
Oh yeah, it was an absolute bummer, and yes, and so this has been really great to see. I mean, there's been some hiccups along the way, and an injury that happened, you know, early in his return.
Oh
the,
yeah,
the creative that surrounded him. Feeling like him kind of being forced into the main event of WrestleMania as a triple threat with Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. Even the heel turn with the formation of the Judgment Day. Wow, I guess I'm.
Yeah, no, I his.
That's like a lot of his run here. That's like a lot of his run here. It feels like it was some stuff that wasn't exactly work. It wasn't exactly clicking. I mean, but
well, and even from honestly, like. For me, most of it hasn't been great.
Going back to
the original, like, I still don't understand completely why that Edge-Randy Orton feud lasted as long as it did. That just felt like, I believe the injury played at least a little bit of a part in that continuing as long as it did. It still seemed unnecessarily long, and I mean, it to me, that's even though there was some good stuff in that feud, that dragging on to start with, you know, was kind of a bad thing from jumpstart. So yeah, his storyline comeback has not been all that good so far.
No, I mean the unquestionable highlight was probably had to be the Seth feud last year.
Yes.
And then the stuff with Miz and Beth and Maurice was cute at points. And once again, never should have tried to make him a heel. It wasn't working with me. So yeah.
It wasn't working with a lot of people.
Yeah, no. And then, you know, what would you have done with this moment last night if he stayed heel and stayed with the Judgment Day? You know, quite a bit would have been lost there. So yeah, if we only have another year with him, let's be smarter about how we use the guy.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, I don't mind. This is kind of, I did think this about this match. I'm like, now this is the kind of match that I was hoping I would see Edge have. You know what I mean? Like, when he came back, it seemed like when him and Christian were on the podcast that he was referring more to working with the younger talent. So him working a nearly 20-minute match with Damian Priest, that was maybe it, more in my wheelhouse of what I thought would go on with Edge and not, you know, a six-month-long feud with Randy Orton. So I do kind of at least like that aspect of Edge kind of working with some of the newer people to either maybe help them out on some extra fine points of wrestling or just to help put them over for years to come. Because Priest does have, he definitely has more time ahead of him than Finn Balor. Maybe not as much as Rhea Ripley, but he still got some runway there.
So
there was another, I guess within my listing of Torontons, I did mention, Aaliyah. Do you want to tackle that one before talking about, I skipped over a big Toronton, but we can get to her after Aaliyah.
Aaliyah. Oh, what a homecoming that was. She should give. I don't know if she should. She should give. Have Bailey on her Christmas card list for the rest of her life for all the offense Bailey gave her, or she could give. She should give her a bag of coal or something, because oh boy, did that match not do her any favors. She was bad. She was really bad in that match. Like, she was out of place, out of submission, out of position. You know, Bailey is having to, like, plainly tell her where to go, what to do, put herself in moves. It was one of the worst performances I think I've seen in a long time. It was horrid.
Yeah, it definitely was the low light of the night.
This is, you know, I every time the subject of Aaliyah comes up, I make the joke from Tommy Boy about going to college for 7 years, but it's true in the case of Aaliyah.
Oh.
There's no reason she should be this bad. She has been in the WWE system for 7 years, and she was on the indies before that.
Yeah. She's one where I don't get why she's still on the roster. There doesn't even seem to be that, hey, she's good in the locker room kind of situation thing going on. She's been on that roster for a long time, and you've barely seen her, whether it's been NXT or main roster. Has she been on the main roster like 3 or 4 years now?
No, it's only been maybe, it's probably been less than a year, honestly.
Oh, okay. This I need to look up. just because it feels like it's been, okay, it has only been a year. It says 21, so. I could have sworn that it was at least 2 years, honestly. I thought it was 2020 at least. So, yeah, she... I don't get it. Like, you know, you could say, hey, maybe Bailey was rusty. It's possible, but I'm going to give Bailey the benefit of the doubt because I know what I've seen Bailey do before.
Yeah. No. That was not... Nothing about that match is Bailey's fault. The only fault Bailey had was she didn't put her foot down and say, no, this is a squash. This is my first match back. I'm not giving you that much offense. But Bailey's a nice person and sees herself as a leader of the women's locker room. So, and you know, so she was really nice. She was nicer than she absolutely needed to be. No, that should have been all about her.
Because
we're rolling into that six woman tag, which is surely going to lead directly to Bayley versus Bianca for the women's title. Bayley needed to look strong. End of story.
Yeah, that was the part that was kind of weird to me. I'm just like, why is this, like, I could have gone with, I understand if they decided not to go the complete squash match kind of route, but I think you said something about it last night. There's a difference between not getting squashed and getting a match with a commercial break. You know? And she got a match with the commercial break. An offense to match, honestly. You know? Even if it wasn't well executed, they definitely gave her the offense. So...
She got the biggest opportunity of Leah got the biggest opportunity of her career, and she blew it. I mean, I'm usually not this harsh, especially when it comes to ring work, because I don't like to pick on people for doing things that I could never do in my life. But that was just that bad. It never should have happened like that. There's nothing. Aaliyah has nothing going.
I mean, it'd be one thing too, I guess. I don't think she's a great promo. Like, I don't know if she's bad per se, because I don't think she's done that much talking. But there just is kind of nothing there. Like, she hasn't talked you into the building any way, shape, or form. Like, she's shown no, like, strong point of excelling. Like, sometimes people stick around because, you know, maybe they are just a good promo and it helps out and you can talk your way into pretty much every match. But, again, she has had just... She's been there since 2015, and she has had very little opportunity, but somehow still been there that whole time. It is the craziest thing.
Yeah, no, it is crazy. She has just made it this long through every cut. She has stuck around while not really bringing anything to the table.
Even if you take away the matchup that we just watched, I just have a hard time thinking that she brought anything to the table ever. She got the most TV exposure with the Robert Stone brand stuff. Even that, though, wasn't great exposure in general.
No, it really wasn't. It's always been treated like a joke, and
yeah.
To the stick, you know, it doesn't do even today Von Wagner any favors to be associated with Robert Stone, because Robert Stone's never managed a winner.
Really helps to have a winner involved with your stable. Really helps helps the PR business. There to say that you coached a champion.
Yeah, no, I mean, from day one, Robert Stone has literally been picked up, turned upside down, and dropped into a garbage can. That's how they've treated him. Like, so, yeah, and Aaliyah got that stink on her too. So,
yeah. So enough about that one. That Toronton. I guess when I was doing my litany of wrestlers from Toronto, I forgot to mention one Trish Stratus, who made an appearance right off the hop on Raw there.
Yeah, no, it was good to see Trish. She made the rounds the whole weekend through their weekend tour of Ontario, and was, I believe, interacting with Bailey and EO and Dakota at every other stop as well. Taking it to Monday Night Raw. No, I mean, it was good, said, good to see her. Good interaction with Bailey. If they want to do that that match at some point down the line, it'd be more than welcome. Trish obviously looked great, so no, it was a nice treat to have Trish Stratus as a part of Raw.
Yeah, it didn't seem like she was really. They kind of set up a match, but you know, it wasn't so pronounced that I'm like, it's definitely happening in the near future situation. But yeah, I'd be kind of surprised if she didn't eventually, if that match didn't eventually happen. You know, maybe somewhere that's gonna draw some exposure. One of the bigger pay per views would not shock me. So yeah, it was fun to see Trish back on TV. Yeah, we got the six-woman match looming with all of those ladies. And we already had a tag team match set up for... Does Bailey's group have a name yet?
Not officially. They're trying to get this whole control thing. But they have it over, but they also haven't made it official, although I've seen something where there is a trademark for it with control spelled CTRL, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Just like, yeah, computer. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. We get it, guys. Yeah, okay. Well, no, I guess I was kind of interested. Like, that was something that kind of dawned on me. I guess they've been around long enough. You usually expect some type of a group name at this juncture. And one hasn't been asked about, and one has not really been offered either.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, because it was not much of a surprise that Io Sky and Dakota Kai went over on Asuka and, Sugar, who was her partner?
Alexa Bliss?
Oh, Alexa Bliss. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I think last week you and I talked about this kind of feeling like the finals because it was the biggest names, especially after a litany of injuries to the NXT women on the other side of the bracket.
We don't know if Nikita's Zoe situation is an injury situation or if it's a vaccination requirement situation. Canada.
But wasn't... Oh, is Nikita the problem in that department?
Yeah, I believe so. But I don't know. Maybe Zoe actually was hurt. I'm not sure. But...
Oh.
Yeah, that SmackDown bracket was a dumpster fire to begin with. Filled with people who'd never interacted with each other before in their lives. And it has only gotten worse. It's only gotten worse... I don't know why. You might as well just put the titles on Io and Dakota without having to go through all of this.
Well,
another way.
Thankfully, it is the final. The next match is the final. Thankfully,
well, they have to go through. Well, first they have to do a last chance trip, a four way match.
Oh well, yes.
Then I assume later that night they'll do the semifinal tag team match, so that next Monday's Raw can be the final. Which is a foregone conclusion that EO and Dakota are winning the whole thing.
Yeah. Asuka and Alexa Bliss should have been on the other side of the bracket. They did not do good planning in creating their bracket.
No, they did not. No, that should have been the final.
Especially since I saw someone have this. Is one of their tweets, but yeah, sign me up for Io Sky and Asuka in a singles feud.
Absolutely, yes. Yes. That is the beauty of doing these six-person or more faction warfares. Every week you can have different matches, one-on-one tag matches, and it keeps it fresh. Yeah, it has always worked since the beginning of time in wrestling, and it will all, and as I said, it will always continue to work. And yes, a special treat will be the time that Asuka and Io have that first one-on-one match.
Yeah. That was my big takeaway from that matchup, is that I can't wait for that singles match to come around. Is there anything else on Raw to talk about? I guess there is. The Seth Rollins Riddle stuff, maybe, to go over quickly.
I mean, they just got into another fight. Nothing. No. I mean, it's booking 101 stuff. It's fine.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. It's,
yeah, just there.
It's there.
It's playing its role.
It's playing its role. Should be a good match at Clash of the Castle. I actually don't know who should go over in that match. I'm trying to, Riddle hasn't really had a big win in a while, but then again, Seth's whole thing in this whole year is he's barely won any matches, so.
Yes, both of them have had their problems with losing the big matchups this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, Riddle literally can't challenge Roman Reigns, and Seth Rollins would be an opponent for Drew McIntyre down the line if Drew does pull off the win.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see Seth getting some type of top title opportunity sometime soon-ish. He's been kind of kept out of that picture for a little while now.
Yeah, he got the kind of weird heel versus heel match with Reigns at the Royal Rumble that didn't have a finish, and then they had no follow-up for it.
Oh.
But other than that, he's been out of the title picture really since, he was on SmackDown when Roman Reigns began his reign, and they only interacted that one time. And since he's been on Raw, not really much. He's had some. I think he's been a part of some multiple person matches, multi man matches for the title, but nothing.
No,
not a solid singles match.
Yep. That would be kind of interesting to see Seth back in that conversation. And I'm with you. The Riddle-Rollins stuff, it's telling the story that it needs to be told. It's nothing fancy, though, that needs to be talked about a lot. I guess another close-to-hometown pop, I suppose, would be Kevin Owens having a nice little reception for himself in his home country.
Yeah, interesting. Kevin Owens seemingly, moving more and more closer to the babyface side, which, interesting since they just a couple weeks ago had him seriously injure Ezekiel. And now he's heading towards a babyface turn. Now I've seen some people mention that the possibility that, Kevin Owens ends up saving Sami Zayn from some type of abuse from the Bloodline, and Owens and Zayn become tag team champions at some point.
It could work.
Yeah, it would absolutely work. Now it would have worked the best over the last weekend, or particularly Friday in Montreal, if they. Got around to the storyline faster, but I'm sure we get a good reaction anywhere anyway.
Yeah, I think those two will get a reaction no matter what venue that they're at. But yeah, I mean, would have been especially apropos at Montreal there. I suppose since we kind of transitioned over that way, Because the SmackDown was in Montreal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, SmackDown was in Montreal, yes.
Yeah, and good gravy. So, yeah, we get, to lead off the show, and I guess to wrap up the women's tag stuff, Gigi Dolin, evidently the one hurt this time around. Toxic Attraction gets the win, but Gigi gets hurt in the process, and again, not that I necessarily expected them to win, but it would have been nice. I think that at least they would have fit in the finals, and it could have been played as more of a match considering their recent track record.
Yeah.
That part kind of sucks, but what are you going to do?
It really does suck. Yeah, no. I mean, they could have been a shot in the arm for this women's tag team thing, and, well, it's a concussion. Hopefully she won't be out too long by the point where maybe in the coming weeks they can get that NXT Women's Championship off of Mandy Rose and just bring the whole act up finally. It's time.
yeah. They need to be off of NXT if you want to keep that developmental. So Sheamus ends up earning a Intercontinental title match at Clash at the Castle. All of the prominent Europeans, especially the ones from England and or Ireland, getting some nice spots here for Clash at the Castle, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's in Wales, but you're guaranteed a lot of Irish are going to be there. A lot of people coming in from Scotland, and so Drew McIntyre's going to get a great reaction. But old Sheamus getting a match with Gunther. Tactically heel versus heel, but I imagine Sheamus is going to get a quite the nice response. And, oh boy, I'm definitely looking forward to this one. This should be great.
there should be some pretty serious big boy action going on there. I feel like, I don't know if we've called Sheamus a pandemic MVP or if he's maybe come a little more alive. Slightly post-pandemic here.
It was throughout the pandemic and after. And if really you can go back and retroactively look at Sheamus's career in its totality and realize he was always really damn good.
There's a reason that him and Cesaro worked for quite some time. I mean, obviously, Cesaro holds up his end of the bargain quite well enough. But yeah, Sheamus was still really good in that time frame, even though he wasn't singles wrestler.
Sheamus has been around a long time now. So yeah, that was only a reasonably short stretch of his career, though they were together a while. I mean, he's been champion multiple times. Maybe not the best main champion. I think the one run he got coming off of beating Daniel Bryan in 30 seconds, that was probably his peak run.
Oh.
Of matches he got to have and run as a top level champion.
Yeah, he's definitely been a guy that he got to the mountain top pretty early and then never really bounced. Got his way back in there. They gave him some title opportunities, and he's always gotten TV time.
Yeah, he's always gotten TV time. You look back on his entire career, it's a damn good career. And I think we only really started appreciating it during that pandemic period and afterwards.
I think there was definitely a little bit of a lull there. After his hot start and the career got a little bit weird, because was that things got weird for him? Didn't he have that long-term mysterious injury that he could never seemingly get cleared from the WWE to wrestle, but he's doing these workout videos and he's keeping himself really in shape, and you're like, what's going on here?
There may have been something like that. He was, that's right, he was gone for a while and then came back with his old haircut and his old look. But they didn't bring him his fit, but his more recent entrance theme. That's true, because he was gone for a pretty long time.
Yeah.
You know, and then when he came back, he ditched the mohawk and went back to his original haircut.
Yeah, so that was definitely a strange time period for him to go through there. I'm trying to think, but yeah, like his career, like, because you were talking about it, and I always remember back to Jeremy and his wife meeting Sheamus at the MARTA stop down in Atlanta. So I want to say that was 2013?
That was 2011.
2011? Okay, so it was even longer ago than I thought. And he wasn't, you know, like, he was pretty early in his run, but still, he'd probably been around for a couple of years before that. You know, he's closing in on a decade and a half on the main roster.
Yes, he is, yes.
Without even looking up his information, like, that guy has probably got at least 13 years on the main roster. And it's just like, hot damn, man. That just, you know, he's in that category of most guys don't last this long. Like, despite those injury woes that we just talked about and that kind of odd time off, that guy, for the most part, has been relatively injury-free during most of his WWE run. Like, I felt like all those injuries kind of centered around that weird time period of his career where we stopped appreciating him. But he's really had a nice long run going on for, like, the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, certainly from the bar run on down, yes. He's had some really, 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 some really good matches. Good, hard-nosed, you know, tough feuds, physical. Yeah, he's gotten really appreciated in that time. Yeah. So, you know, and then putting him against Gunther, inject that into my veins. So those two are going to beat the crap out of each other, and I'm going to enjoy every second of it.
I am with you. And there, you know, I'm kind of looking here. There was not a whole lot going on for SmackDown here.
No, SmackDown is still, you know, Raw has improved tremendously, and it was already actually in the former creative regime had been doing better for a while.
Yes,
and now it's even improved upon that. This SmackDown roster, it still needs a lot of help, and it needs a lot of. And rumors today that they're going to push the draft all the way till after WrestleMania. Ugh, this SmackDown roster can't sustain that, I don't think, but we'll see.
It's still a bit of a disaster, despite the fact that both Roman Reigns and Ronda Rousey are mainly SmackDown attractions. Like, it would really be a wasteland without Roman Reigns chewing up a whole lot of scenery more weeks than not.
Well, over the last few months, it's arguably been not.
Yeah, it has been not a lot. I think that they've done a good job of covering that with the Usos and Sami Zayn interactions. And yeah, they do always keep the Usos involved in the storyline, which, and they always reference the Tribal Chief. I guess I'm a big believer in, it's okay to be off TV if you're not off, you know, like, he's off TV, but his presence is still there. And I do think that that's important. Like, you don't, it's nice to do vignettes and things of that nature when you're building someone up. You don't really need to do a whole lot for Roman Reigns these days.
Right.
You know, he has his brand, and you know, just kind of keep with it and keep doing what you're doing. But yeah, Roman Reigns did in fact show up though to Montreal this past week. And he just made his easy demand to be acknowledged, and for some reason the people of Montreal were booing him. I don't get it. Tisk tisk on the on that Montreal crowd. But yeah, him after having Karrion Kross seemingly inserted into this feud, I think we can firmly say that Clash at the Castle is definitely going to, I would say at this point, definitely be a singles match, since it's, is it just over a week away now?
It's a week and a half now, yeah.
Week and a half, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoons are on Labor Day weekend, set the time for wrestling, for some live wrestling. And yeah, at this point, obviously, it has to stay McIntyre versus Reigns one on one. Once again, Cross not making an appearance on SmackDown in the country of Canada. So that's another person with some with questionable vaccine.
Yes, considering his political leanings that have been very very out there, yeah, would not be shocking if he is unvaccinated.
And yes, and then you got the so then you also got a show in Cardiff, Wales. I don't remember it. So probably another show he won't physically be at to actually get involved in this match. So we're looking at, I imagine, whether Roman Reigns retains the title, or Drew McIntyre wins the title or not, McIntyre is going to be moved into a feud with Karrion Kross pretty quickly afterward.
Yeah, that would make way more sense than him feuding with Roman Reigns.
Yeah. So again, McIntyre is pretty hot on this run. He's, excellent. He's actually been excellent on the microphone. He really knows how to do the fired up promo, babyface promo that makes you want to run through a wall for him. And obviously his work has always been good. Yeah, if there's a time to do it, I mean, this is it. Not getting a better chance to get that title on McIntyre, so that's a good place in the castle. It's not happening.
He is not getting that anytime soon if he does not get it at Clash at the Castle. Anything else to cover before wrapping this podcast up here?
Is there anything that I was thinking about bringing up? No, I think we're good.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, because I do not think that I watched the nominally mentioned Rampage.
I've given up on that. Unless they advertise something that catches my eye. No, I watch enough wrestling. I mean, I just can't. I couldn't be bothered to re-up with IWTV for J-Lit. As you've been watching, anything else, any other promotion, I couldn't have cared less about the G1 in New Japan. No, I mean,
yeah.
WWE and AEW take up almost every night of the week. Yeah. I watch enough wrestling.
Yeah, that's why I know Clash of the Castle. There is probably like at least a 75% chance that I watch that well after the fact. maybe not well after the fact, but maybe Saturday evening when I'm back at home, since I rather enjoy day drinking instead of night drinking these days. So, I suppose, speaking of drinking, on my business trip here the past couple of days, I found myself down in initially Clarksville, Tennessee, ended up staying in Bowling Green, Kentucky. For those of us in the state of Ohio, yes, there is another Bowling Green that is not Bowling Green, Ohio. It is very close by. Also, the home of the Corvette Museum, should one be interested. I picked up this six-pack West 6th Brewing from Lexington, Kentucky. This is their Penny Ryle Pale Ale. It is quite tasty. I think I've mentioned before that straight-up pale ales are probably a little more in my wheelhouse than regular IPAs. I like the, just in general, lighter hoppiness of the beer rather than some in-your-face stuff. That gets to be a little bit much for yours truly from time to time. So things are a little more mellowed out, but still, you know, kind of a nice kick of hops in there to give your palate a little ride. So yeah, should you find yourself in Lexington, Kentucky, maybe swing by West 6th Brewing when you get a chance. So that is the hashtag Belltime Beer for this very podcast, and from at DeFrango11. The man on the other end is at Stunt Callie. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.